Screen's being recorded.
Okay, fine. So you want
being recorded now.
It's being recorded now. Yeah, I guess we should start then. Okay. Okay. So this year is not exactly what I wanted to call it, but something like two methodologies of learning. Historical. It's Nun Gimel Mit Aleph and Erevin.
Yeah, I followed Miguel, then I saw the Erevin.
It's Nun Gimel Mit Aleph and Erevin. It's a really interesting Gemara about. It's like something we discuss a lot, like methodologies, different ways of learning, and it's something that you can use based upon the in the time of the Gemara. The Gemara kind of goes through it. So if you look at towards the bottom. Okay, if you look towards the bottom here, it starts Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, about 10 lines up from the bottom.
Did you say Gimel Amar Rav?
No, Nun Gimel, sorry, 53A, Nun Gimel Amar Rav.
Thanks.
Okay, no problem. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara is like this. It really just goes to the about 10 lines, the next page. And then we'll see if we can analyze it and discuss. Okay, so like this: Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Bnei Yehuda shekpidu al lashonam niskayma terasam biyadam. Bnei Galil shlo ekpidu al lashonam lo niskayma terasam biyadam. Okay, so Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, it says the people in Yehuda, which is the south of Eretz Yisrael, so who were makbid, who were particular about their language. So the Torah was lasted; it was maintained in their hands. But Bnei Galil, which is the northern part of Eretz Yisrael, who were not particular about their language, then they did not. The Torah did not last in their hands. Okay. So Rashi tells you the first pshat. The Gemara is going to reject this. It says Shekpidu Lashonam, the Damber Belashon Sach, to speak in a eloquent way. Velo b'lashon megumgam, and not in a confused type of manner. K'dermina lekaman b'bnei Galil. Okay, so it's the question of like how clearly they were able to formulate their words and their ideas to speak in a simple, clear, elegant, fluid method. Okay, so somehow that contributed to the Torah being maintained in their hands. Okay. Now, again, I think this is the time period we're talking about because you can see a few statements in a row contrasting Bnei Galil and Bnei Yehuda. Those are the two different methods that we're going to discuss. Is this split in Eretz Yisrael? So this is a statement from Rav, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. So I think this is talking about the time after Rabbi Akiva, after. During the time of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva, I think you mean Rabbi Akiva is a little bit next generation, the base Sanhedrin was in Yavne. Okay, Yavne. And then after that, maybe after the Bar Kokhba rebellion and the Romans destroyed Beitar, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was a kid at that point. That basically, I think the Torah went up to Usha. That's where the Beis went to Usha, which I think is in the north. And I guess there was a split between the north and the south of Eretz Yisrael. I think it's basically, it seems to me, it's the second half of the Tanaic period is when we're talking about. Okay, I think after Beitar and after the Bar Kokhba rebellion, until Rav is the first of the Amoraim. So this would seem to be the second half of the, something along those lines. Maybe somebody can do something a little bit better, but that's the best I could do. Second half of the Tanaic period. So you have the split between the Galil and Yehuda. And one is makbid on their lashon, the Bnei Yehuda, and the Bnei Galil were not. So the Gemara asks the question. It says, "Midi b'kpeida taya milsa." Is it really have to do with kpeida that somebody who's like makbid on their lashon to speak and like exactly, saying everything exactly precise? That's what it's dependent upon. Ella b'nei Yehuda de daiki lishna uminsichi lehu simana neskaimatrasim biyadan. Negalia de lo daiki lishna velo minsichi lehu simana lo neskaimatrasim biyadan. So saying it doesn't have to be. What we're saying is whether the Torah is like preserved and the transmission of the Masorah is maintained. It doesn't have to do with the fact that you're able to speak in an eloquent, perfectly clear, formulated manner, but it really has to do with whether you're medaik in your lashon. So what does that mean? So Rashi says, daiki lishna lachzer ba'osir lashon shall you show me rabbim, to go over the exact language that they heard their rebbe say the statement in. Since like very often when you hear, let's say, a sugya, so you know somebody has a statement, the Gemara says Tashma, and then it says Meisve and Tashma, like a series of Tanai statements. So when they hear the Rebbe present a sugya, so one brisa after another after another, again, this is during the time of the Tanai, and there's no mission even at this point. So they would be like they're making a mnemonic. Okay, they're making a mnemonic one after the other. Okay, so what the B'nai Yehuda would do, and this is why the Torah would miskaim in their hands, is that when they learned the sugya from the Rabbi, so a sugya has multiple shmuos, one statement after another, a series of Tanaic statements. Again, this is before anything was written down. So they would record it exactly in the same lashon that the Rebbe did, exactly the same order of presentation of the shmuos, of the statements, of the braces and the questions, one after the other. And then they would make simanim, mnemonics, in order to remember the exact presentation. Okay, so they would be careful to preserve the exact lashon they heard in from the Rebbe, and then make mnemonics to preserve the order of these statements, not to forget any of the statements, and not to forget change up the order. Okay, that was the B'nai Yehuda would do. The B'nai Galil did not do that. Okay, they weren't makbid in order to remember the exact formulation that they heard from the Rebbe, and they weren't makbid to exactly preserve the statements one after the other. And they didn't make mnemonics. They weren't able to make mnemonics because everybody had a little bit of a different version of the order of the sugya and the language of the sugya, so they never made mnemonics to preserve exactly how they heard it from the rabbi. Okay? And as a result, the Torah was a miskayim b'yadam. They weren't ultimately, it seems like the Baal, the Masorah ultimately was preserved through the B'nai Yehuda. Okay? That is the first difference between the B'nai Yehuda and B'nai Galil. And part of what we're going to be trying to do today, there's going to be three differences. We're going to be trying to unify the two schools of thought and perhaps justify what the B'nai Galil were doing. Is it just the B'nai Yehuda were better, or the B'nai Galil had a svara, which is ultimately I'm going to try to explain. Okay? So that's the first difference. Okay. That is Hikbidu al-Lashon. Okay, good. So, or Daiki Lashon, the ignorance of Daiki Lashon, precise and mnemonics to remember. Okay, first difference. Next statement. Okay. B'nai Yehuda. Okay, what's that base? Hold on a second. Okay, leave that alone. B'nai Yehuda gomru mechad rabba niskaima terasim biyadan. So B'nai Yehuda, they would learn from one Rebbe. They had one Rebbe, and they would learn from him. Because of that, the Torah was mekuyim in their hands. B'nai Galil d'lo gomru mechad rabba. B'nai Galil did not learn from just one Rebbe. They had multiple Rebbeim. Lo niskaima terasim biyadan. So they weren't be able to be mekayim Torah in their hands. Okay, Rashi lo gamri mechad rabba. So B'nai Yehuda B'nai Galil had multiple rebbeim. While you show me mizeh b'lashon zeh, mizeh b'lashon acher. So they would go to different rebbeim and they would hear different versions of the Gemara, of the sugya, different versions of the statement. You know, one says Rabbi Elazar said this way. One has Rabbi Elazar say it a little bit differently in different versions. Avav bisha shneim. Even if they were ultimately and they mounted to the same point, but the fact that there was different girsas, different nuschos, so that just leads to confusion. Once you don't exactly remember the precise way it was said, because there's like multiple ways you've heard it, so that it causes you to forget because you can't remember any specific way. You have to remember four different versions, and then you end up forgetting. Okay, so that's the other reason why B'nai Yehuda remembered it. we were able to pass it on, and B'nai Galil were not able to. Okay. Now, the third difference is interesting, is Ravina, not Ravina Marav, but Ravina. Ravina Amar B'nai Yehuda de Galu Mesechta Neskayim Matarasim B'yadan. B'nai Galil de Lo Galu Mesechta Lo Neskayim Matarasim B'yadan. Okay, so the B'nai Yehuda were Galu Mesechta, and that's why the Torah is Mekuyim for them. So Rashi says, the Galu Mesechta, Lamdu Lachirim, Kach Shemati. So it means they taught others. Okay, because they taught others, it's an interesting position as opposed to B'nai Yehuda. Maybe it means they were like makbid to give shears, right? So like sometimes, you know, a person learns, but they don't necessarily give a shear very often. So because, like, I guess they all had this idea that they should be giving a shear, not just learning, but they should give over the Torah. That's the Torah's Mekuyim in their hands, as opposed to B'nai Galil, who weren't makbid on that, to give it, to teach what they're, to teach it. Obviously, they were a shiurim, and they had Rebbeim, but maybe there was an emphasis that you should, every person should try to teach, what they learned. Okay. And you know, it's true when you give a shiur, the idea becomes clearer, you're forced to formulate something and arrange it precisely. Okay, so that's one possibility. I think which is similar to Rashi's next pshat, Lishnachrina, is which I think is a consequence of giving shiur, so maybe there's some that are related. Mefarshin Shmuoseyam Uddaktikim Bataimal Shadavar Ad Shimisyai Shibaliban. So what does it mean, Galu Mesechta, according to the second pshat in Rashi? It means they clarify their shmuos when they hear a statement from the rabbi. They hear, you know, the sugya, the brisa, the mishnah, whatever, before the mishnah, but the tanaic statement from the rabbis. So they explained it, and they were like being precise to understand exactly the tama davar, get clear the definition, what exactly is the reasoning behind it, what's the svar, in a very clear, distinct manner. Until it was like really settled in their mind exactly what the concept is, as opposed to just like talking around the idea and having a vague notion, but they made sure to clear what exactly is the precise definition for this thing. Okay. And then the Gemara says, finally here, on that point of Gali Mesechta, David Gali Mesechta, Shalom Gali Mesechta. So David, right, so this difference of Galu Mesechta between the B'nai Galil and B'nai Yehuda, or the B'nai Yehuda were Galu Mesechta and B'nai Galil were not, that goes all the way back to David and Shaul. Okay, so much, much earlier, right? A thousand years earlier or more. David Galu Mesechta Kedechsebe. Okay, so this is, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Yirei Echa Yiruni V'yismuchubi V'yismuchubi. And the pasuk continues, but okay. So Rashi, Yiruni v'yismechuni, they'll see me, I guess, and they'll be happy. Fishesh mu'asa mechuvanos. So they're going to be happy. Those who fear you, meaning, I guess, to me, the chamim, I think they'll see me and they'll be happy, David's saying, because his shmuos, when David gave over the Mesorah, it was precise. It was precise. To say what and accurate is probably the better term. It was accurate. Well, that which is Asr, he said Asr. That which is Mutter, he said Mutter. Okay. David Gali Masech, the Kedemir and Brachos. And Rashi says, what's the Gemara and Brachos? Shaya Yaga Batora Umor Haros. David would, you always think of David as the warrior, or David as the king, or the poet. But no, in our Masorah, David is the Baal Hora. He would work in Torah, and he would give Horos of Psak. Yadim luchlachas bedam v'shaper v'shilya. So the Gemara's Dorish that he would get his hands dirty to see maros of dam from nidos and the pasuk shilos about yoledes. Is it a miscarriage? Is it the placenta? Is it a baby? Is it just, you know, is it just blood, or all these different, get his hands dirty? Literally, he's getting his hands dirty and trying to answer shilos of esuvahetar and tamantara. V'omer mipiboshes on Rebbe. Yafa Denanti, Yafa Zachisi, and you would say to, I think maybe Boshes is his Rebbe, was his Rebbe, and he was embarrassed from him, something like that. So he would say, maybe he's checking it out with him, did I do properly? I'm not sure exactly. Okay.
God bless.
Okay. For me, not mod katan, adinu ha'atzdi yoshiv b'shabes tischa kamuni zed David. Okay, so another Gemara, she's saying where you see David was yoshiv and giving hora, you know, do things properly. Okay, I didn't really look up these Gemaras to see exactly what the flavor that Rashi is quoting, but it's just David in the Masorah is a bal harah with getting his hands dirty in order to give proper, accurate haras. Okay, as opposed to Shaul, the lo galim masechta kedichsev be. So I know Shaul wasn't. What's the gear to change here? Yarshia. It said about Shaul, when I guess things went sour, every way he turned, he would act wickedly, like rishus. Okay. Rashi lo yezocha lahora kalacha. That he was not zocha to be more kalacha, Shaul. He would give inaccurate sucking. Okay. Ultimately, Hashem forgave him for that. Different one. Okay, let's let that go. Further Gemara. Okay, so you see, David gave accurate psakim, but Shaul did not. Okay, so we have basically summing up what we have. There's a little tosis. It's very important. I'm just going to wait to do it. It's a little one. The last tosis on Amud Aleph. But let me just sum up what we have, and then we'll try to discuss this. Yeah, so the three differences between the B'nai Yud and B'nai Galil, okay, is that now the consequence is ultimately B'nai Yud done Neskamet Harasim B'yadon, B'nai Galil lo Neskamet Harasim B'yadon. Okay, so B'nai Yud, for the purposes of Gemara, seem to be the good guys because they're the ones who are the Torah's Mekuyim in their hands. They're able to maintain the Masorah. So what is the three differences? So the first one, the Gemara ends up settling, is that the B'nai Yehuda were makbid to remember the exact lashon that the Rebbe said, to remember the order of the Shmuos, all the Shmuos, everything they heard from the Rebbe, and to make mnemonics, simonim, you know, like it was simonim, mnemonics, the Gemara, this very Gemara itself starts off with a simon. If you look in the middle of the page there, as simon. So make certain mnemonics in order to remember exactly the order of the presentation. B'nai Yehuda did that, B'nai Galil did not. Second difference is that the B'nai Yehuda learned from one Rebbe, so they only had one nusach, they only had one girsa of a particular Shmuah, as opposed to B'nai Galil, which went around to multiple Rebbeim, and they had different, as a result, they had different girsas, even if it doesn't necessarily, sometimes it changes the meaning, sometimes it doesn't. But either way, you get confused. Once you have multiple girsos, you end up getting confused, which is the right one. It's hard to remember six different versions, even two different versions. Just once you don't have, you know, much easier to remember one version. But once you're remembering multiple versions of it, you end up forgetting everything. You remember forget the whole thing. You don't remember what's accurate. Just it hurts your ability to remember what's proper. And the final difference is that B'nai Yehuda is Gali Masechta, which either means they taught others, or it means that they made sure to get the ideas clear and explain it and be precise and definitive of what's the underlying concept behind it until it was really settled in their mind. And B'nai Galil seemingly didn't do that. They didn't take the effort to do that, to get clear and precise and exactly the exact definition, what exactly is proper. And the Gemara compares that to David and Shaul, where David did that. He was accurate in his horos. He got everything absolutely clear, getting his hands in Yados Mirlachos Padam. And the B'nai and Shaul did not, and that's considered a rishus, or a type of rishus on Shaul because he made mistakes because of the nature of his psak. Okay? Yeah, go ahead, Yosef.
First second part about the honestly, Galil just sounds much better by Miles. And
Yehuda. Yehuda, you mean?
No, Galil.
Oh, you like Galil, okay, good.
And then I guess my head's the is the equivalent of saying, if you want to be accurate, ignore every single girsa correction idea ever. Just that the best way is just to assume that all the asterisks have no point to them whatsoever, and they're all saying you should ignore all of them. That's what B'nai Yehuda sounds like to me, because that's like saying only hear for one rav, which means
okay. You like the idea of multiple rebbeim.
I mean, like yes. Otherwise,
you like a lot of girsas. You like all the options.
I mean, yes. Otherwise, you're just going to have at the end of the day, you cannot. I mean, can never stop mistakes from happening. That is impossible.
Right.
So So you either can never have a chance to learn that a mistake was made in the past, or you can have a chance to learn a mistake was made in the past.
Okay, I hear the advantage. There's an advantage of having multiple yourselves because maybe one of them is wrong, and if you could have multiple ones, you can try to evaluate which is the right one. Or maybe there's multiple ideas, and why be locked into one gear set? There's, I definitely hear that type of advantage. Yes, okay, go ahead.
I'll give like the flip,
Okay.
which I think is more advantageous. I think that like the common denominator with all of them is structure.
Okay.
In that, if like if you're in, let's say I was in yeshiva in Israel, and I would hop shiurim every day, right? I'd go from one rabbi to the next, I would not get anything just because there's different styles, there's different things they're trying to pinpoint. Like it reminds me of something that like I used. There was like once again where I was thinking one way, my rabbi presented a different way, and I was like, oh wow, I got it completely wrong. Then I realized like, no, I didn't. We used different language. And I
Right.
think like if you magnify, like if you do that with your learning though, it's going to magnify times 10 or 1,000, where you have so many different things. They could all be agreeing, but Rashi said like, we'll just confuse you. I think that's one thing with the rabbis. I think the rest with like mnemonics and teaching, like that's all about like building yourself a structure so that you accomplish a certain thing within your learning.
Okay. And therefore you're saying, and therefore what?
Therefore, I think that it could explain why Yehuda were successful because they had the structure that A forced them to go over, or according to one side, right, to
Right.
go over and do Chazara and get their stuff well so they could teach
Right.
it, and B that they heard one derech of learning, so they didn't have four people saying the same thing but in different words, and therefore
Right.
confusing them. And then finally, this idea of having mnemonics and having like a structure for yourself where you set something that makes it easier to remember instead of going to shiur, enjoying it, being
Yeah.
inspired for an
Okay,
hour,
that's good.
and then it leaving your brain.
Okay, good. That's definitely, it seems that jumps out at you to some degree. The B'nai Yehuda seem to be much more structured, ordered, precise, definitive type of
It's
approach.
all scientific, like having the definitions that are very clear. It's good, I mean, in a good way.
There's something good in this kind of Torah also be done. But it's certainly that kind of approach. It definitely seems they want to get exactly, they want to have one girsa, and they don't want to be making, forgetting it or being confused with it. They're making mnemonics. They're getting the exact language the Rebbe did. When they have a svara, they want to get it exactly clear and precise and well formulated, so they can give it over potentially. That definitely seems to be the B'nai Yehuda's approach. We'd like to see what's the machlokas here. Maybe explain it. Is there really a machlokas? Are they just two different approaches, or is one better than the other? So let me show you one Tosos. So the Gemara seems to be saying that B'nai Yehuda are better. Right, and this kind of Taurus and B'yadim seems to be a good thing that you're looking for. So I just think it's not so simple. And here's like one Tosos, which we're going to show you that it's just not so simple, and then we'll see if we can develop the idea further.
Yeah, also interesting. This Chaimer Torah, Torosa is it is like one aspect of learning, which is retention.
Yeah, for
They
sure.
focus on retention, not focus on creativity.
Yeah, exactly. That
It
seems to
seems
be
like theoretically, I
right,
mean,
correct.
if you have it written down already, you have another mess like we have. You have a
Yeah.
text. It's it
Okay,
was
good. Excellent. I mean, that's totally where the direction I'm going in. But yeah, they're focused on retention. And keep in mind, I mean, this is to some degree the punchline, but we'll might as well once Mark said it. Okay. That's fine. We'll try to develop it. But they're focused on retention. And you're right, Mark, it's different nowadays when everything is written down. And that's going to be interesting. And it seems like B'nai Galil, we're going to develop it, focus more on creativity. And we'll see in a second how that plays out. But so there's a somewhat of a trade-off between those two. And the question is going to be, what would you say nowadays? Is one better than the other? We'll try to take up those. Everything's going to be a little bit speculative, but let's see. First, the first is just to you got to move off the one point here that B'nai Yehuda are just objectively better, which it seems to be the presentation of the Gemara. Okay, and I think and also if you see the last Memra is David and Shaul, and David and that seems clearly objectively David is better than Shaul. Shaul is called Rishus, right? Like Yeshia. It sounds like a bad thing. Gets the Haraz wrong. Yechezkiyahu.
It's interesting. I just realized what you were saying about not mentioning, I guess not disclosing the track that they were writing. It sounds like they, at least the way it reads to me, it sounds like they knew what they were going to learn. They just weren't publicizing.
Okay, I'm going with Galu Masechta. It's I know that that's somebody else. The Meiri has a pshat. Meiri is using Rashi. Meiri has the pshat that they would tell you what you're learning in advance, so that you can prepare for it.
Ooh,
Bnei Yehuda? No, the Bnei in Yehuda, he says that
right.
they like,
oh, that's right, yeah.
like give you the sources, the Maamar Komos before right. Shir. So you know exactly where, like right, for, like today, for example, I didn't tell you exactly what we were going to learn. I mean, to Daf, you had no clue what we were going to do. So there's no way for you to prepare what we were going to do. That's a Bnei Galil type of approach, okay? I remember, you know, and you know, Rebbe Shir, we never used to know exactly, right, what the where you prepare, where you don't prepare. But sometimes you get exactly clear where exactly a structure shear, where you have the Makomos in advance and the Talmidim can prepare in advance. That's the
that's Rebbe Yehuda.
That was Bnei Yehuda. That was Bnei Yehuda. Right, exactly. Right. Whenever that's the Meiri's approach. It's not. I'm going with more like Rashi, but I mean, I think that will fit in.
Yeah, I was saying about
it fits in
that Galil, that they didn't.
They didn't. You but know, you come into Shir every day, and who knows exactly what you're doing, and just enjoy the Shir and participate.
That the Rebbe seemed they knew what they were going to do. That's right.
Right.
Like they just didn't tell their students. It was like an intentional thing.
Yeah, right, correct. Like before, I knew, I could have told you guys
before what to do. The way it sounded was no, but I'm talking like a month ahead, like meaning that they right. had like a plan almost.
All right.
But it sounded to me like they also themselves.
Okay, not chose. Clear. According to the Meiri, not clear. Did they know? Did they come to Shir every day with an order structure? This is what I'm going to give over. Right. Some people give a Shir like that. They know exactly what they're going to do, right. and they have the steps, and they give you the Makomos in advance. And some people, it's a much more, as I remember, Rebbe Shir. Yeah, like Rebbe Shir gives you the sources. You kind of know what he's going to do every day. Rebbe Shir just like you know. Sometimes he would tell you what he's doing, but usually it wasn't whatever he told that wasn't what ended up happening. It always would be something else. It was impossible to figure out and prepare. Very difficult. But sometimes you just come to Shir wherever it goes.
Wouldn't know what time it is either.
What? You wouldn't even know what time
it is. We never knew what time it was either.
But, right, correct. It was a lot of different, much more freewheeling, right? So so that the different
styles. But why are these, like you're saying now, like there's like different styles amongst people. So why not just... Like, but the Gemara is kind of saying like it's either or. Why not just do like some people do it this way, some people have it do it this way, whatever's okay. more appealing to that person, and you'll get the best of both worlds.
Okay, so ask me a question at the end, Ken. Ask me a question at the end. I'll try to answer that. I'll try, and if I don't remember to take it up, then I'll ask me at the end. I have an idea for that. But good question.
I'll try to remember.
Okay, make a mnemonic. Okay, so let's just see this one tosos here. The Gomri Mechad Rabba. Okay. So now, what does it mean? They learned from one rabbi, the Bnei Yehuda. So Dosa says, like Gemara. Okay, that's in order to get the text. Okay, the Gemara, Rav Echad Adif, Shal Yibal B'Lashonan Yachad. So that's in order to get the text of the Gemara, to get the proper Nusach, the proper text of the Shmua, then one rabbi is better. Because multiple rabbis have, everybody's here is a little bit different, and you can end up being confused. Ava lemisbar, but for svara amrina perkan devoda zara kol lomei Torah lifnei rav echad ina rosim and bracha lolam. Whoever learns Torah from one rebbe, he's never going to have a siman bracha in his svaras. Okay, because when you hear from multiple rebbeim, you get different perspectives, different ways of thinking. Every person has their own style. You know, like for even in the briskers, you know, a lot of times, you know, if they and I we like to contrast, like Reb Chaim and the Grizz are really completely different styles. The Rav is different from the two of them. We talk, you know, Rebbe is different from those three. Reb Anachin seems also different, and we're like, you know, seeing all the different the Girsas, the different briskers. You know, Pesach last year was doing this year's doing a late melon, and last year we were doing the Grimms. So you're just seeing all the different, just in the briskers, you're seeing all the different approaches. You really see different ways and different styles of svara. And besides the briskers, branching out, besides outside the briskers, there's other methodologies. I haven't branched out that much. It's hard for me to say. But there's just different ways of thinking. And when you see multiple ways, that allows for a creative synthesis of different approaches. And it really allows for creative and different approaches. And if you just stick with one Rebbe, you're just like, in a certain sense, stuck in his way of learning. You never really branch out and explore and see other ways. And it really just, in Rosh and Bracha, it's really going to inhibit your ability to really be creative and to put together multiple different approaches. And that's for Svara, Tosis is saying. So in that, and then this is going to be a, you know, big clue. I think you guys are ready into it anyway, but why? Now there's a downside to having multiple Rebbeim is the Girsa, the Nusach. the text of the Gemara, the text becomes, especially back then when things weren't written down, you end up becoming confused and potentially forgetting the statement. The primary thing is the statement of the Shmuel itself. What did Rabbi Akiva say? You know, I mean, you get confused. He said this, he said that. You don't remember exactly, which in a certain sense is the basis of the whole thing. You don't remember the text. There's nothing as far as to work with. So there's a trade-off here of getting the most accurate text and not forgetting it by sticking to one Rebbe and getting his text of learning it versus the creativity and the svara of having multiple approaches and multiple Rebbeim. That seems to be one way just to see the advantage of Galil and Yehuda compared to each other, which will help us. Yecheskiel.
Historical question. Back when there was rabbis teaching without a written...
mind, just in terms of people's memories, is people had better memories back then, partly because they needed memories.
Right.
Nowadays, you don't need to remember anything. It's just, you know, it's in a book. It's written down, or you can just search the internet. Why remember any fact when you can just Google it? You don't waste your brain power memorizing something you can just look up in a second.
Right.
But that becomes you externalize. We externalize our memory tremendously
right.
onto books and onto the internet. As a result, we don't develop our memory, which has its advantages because we save our energy for other things that we need to navigate the modern world of information age. On the other hand, it's not internal. It becomes harder to work with if you don't have the memory inside of you. So yeah, it's a trade-off.
You
but
see, even the shyest of more of it starts
there is a flow,
there was a flow.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just memorizing A to right. Z. A went into B with some logical order. You could see the right. Where was
I would imagine, yeah.
Where was the time that we went into this mission?
Okay, good. So let's go on that. That's to some degree the first shot. So that's the, in a certain sense, the machlokas for now. It's called machlokas between B'nai Galil and Yehuda by one Rebbe versus multiple. So this is basically spells it out for us. The advantage and disadvantage of each, you know, versus the nusach, versus the creativity and so on. But now, thinking of what Mark is saying here, is when you, now, in terms of the first one, why would the B'nai Galil, right, the B'nai Yehuda being medaik in their lashon, meaning they're saying the exact lashon that the Rebbe said. They would say Shmuach or Shmua, order them, and they would make mnemonics in order to remember the exact presentation. They're very, you know, exact. You know, I don't want to say pedantic, but exact and precise in the way to get the precise formulation that the Rebbe said. It sounds good. It sounds like B'nai Yehuda have it right, and B'nai Galil are just being lazy, not doing that. But so why would B'nai Galil not do that, right? So I think to me is that the advantage of not doing that is you're trying to get to the, when you're in a shiur, you're trying to get to the concept that your Rebbe is saying, the idea he's saying, and the idea of the sugya. And each person gets the idea a little bit differently than somebody else. And it's just, the whole point ultimately is to get into your mind. Now, speaking the whole point from the B'nai Galil perspective, you're trying to get the concept, you're trying to get the idea of the sugya. What's the idea of the shmur? What is the questions and the answers and the flow of the sugya, you're trying to internalize it in your mind. You're not trying to just remember a text of a Gemara, right? That's for a book. You're not a book. You're a human being. You're trying to get to the ideas. And ultimately, if the way you understand it is the way you'll give it over, and it might be different than you got it from your Rebbe because you understood it a little bit differently, you got it from your Rebbe, and you'll give it over in a different way. And to try to reduce the Torah to a bunch of words that you're just going to remember exactly and make up mnemonics to do it. You're taking what, you know, I think the Rav said, the Gemara is not Torah Shalpeh. The Gemara is the results of Torah Shalpeh. Torah Shalpeh is the understanding that you have in your heart, in your mind. So B'nai Galil is saying, well, let's focus on the essence of Torah Shalpeh, not the results of Torah Shalpeh. And therefore they weren't meticulous in terms of getting the exact language because you're focusing on the words when the ideas are what's important. It reminds me, you know, when you see like people write over the Rav's Torah, and I don't say that certain books, certain people write over the words Torah. It's like they get the exact phrase the Rav used in his shiur. Yeah, but it's like you read it, just like it doesn't make any sense sometimes. You just understand. Sometimes they just you just see they don't understand the concept the Rav was saying. And so there's something nice about the fact that like, okay, I know the Rav said these words from this guy. Like this guy I can trust. He got the words down. He bolds the svaras. You know, you can see exactly the words. But like, I don't trust he understood the idea, but like, I know the Rav said these words. Let me see if I can get the idea. But sometimes it's just hard. The whole thing doesn't make sense because the person writing it doesn't have the idea. And as opposed to somebody else who might be reformulating the Rav's svar in his own words, but at least the person giving over has an idea. Now, is this the exact idea the Rav had? I don't know, but it is an idea. And the person, as the person is a Talmud Chacham who got it, you're getting their idea from the Masorah, from the Rav. You're not necessarily trying to get back to the Rav's idea. When you try to preserve that, sometimes you lose the Svarah, you lose the concept. So I think that seems to be the machlokas here, is the B'nai Galil are after the ideas. And when you're after the ideas, ideas are fluid. Every person is different. And you give it over, it changes from one generation to the other. But so be it. B'nai Yehud are trying to preserve the Masorah exactly. From one generation to the next, let us not lose the Masorah. Let us not pray broken telephone. I don't want every generation is going to change a little bit from the next. What's the by the end of the day, 10 generations, all Torah is going to be completely different. It's a Torah Hashem. You're going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. B'nai Yehuda don't want to change it. And B'nai Galil, they're accusing of you're corrupting the Masorah. You're letting your own personal sorrows, and each person is going to have a different idea. And then what's going to happen to the Masorah? There's no uniformity. There's no consistency. There's no predictability of the Masorah being transmitted. And the Gemara is saying so was the case. The B'nai Yehuda were faithful carriers of the Masorah. We have our Masorah in its precise form because B'nai Yehuda did this. B'nai Galil, who are freer and looser, who are more focused on the creative ideas and each Talmud having their own idea, good for them. There's a value to that. But ultimately, they were unable to maintain the Masorah in an accurate, precise way because they never were careful and precise enough in order to formulate in a way that they could make mnemonics to remember it. Things were forgotten, ideas were changed. It wasn't, they were ultimately not the Masorah in terms of its form, didn't go through the B'nai Galil, went through B'nai Yehuda. Yeah.
And so based off that, it kind of sounds like the whole idea of like Derech HaLimud is exactly like B'nai Galil, but it works because we have a set text.
Okay, yeah. I mean, what we do nowadays.
Right, what we do nowadays. Because yes. When you say like, oh, I've Rabban Lechem seen Derech HaLimud, that doesn't mean like you memorize all this pshat and all.
No, it's a program. The approach to learn, yes. Right, the approach where first he clears the hakiras, first he forgets all the possible hakiras and sugya, then he goes down to the particulars.
Right.
Different approach, correct. The whole focus we have in this yeshiva in particular, but I think just the theoretical approach, and seeing the different theories, the different approaches, that's because we don't have the responsibility of transmitting a text anymore. It's written down, it's printed in books. That's just not something we are responsible to. We're responsible to transfer over the almost the opposite now. Now what's in danger of being lost is the method of thinking, the method of learning the Torah, Torah Shvah Pen. And that's really what's in a certain sense more in danger. Not specific words in Shmuos, but in the time of the latter half of the Tanaic era, it was, you know, the Masorah was, make sure you remember what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, what Rabbi Yoshua said, Rabbi Akiva said. You got to get those things down precisely. But once it was formulated in the Mishnah and the Gemara, not as important. We don't have to do that. So that would argue, I would think, that would be an argument to say, at least this first difference and the second difference too, B'zman Hazeh, it would change. Because it wouldn't be, we just don't have this response. So you don't have to make a mnemonic nowadays when it's written down. Yeah, go ahead, Castillo.
Based off that like now we're able to do that because we're, thanks to the fact that we have a preserved Masorah in the first place, we're able to focus on preserving the idea. And you were saying that B'nai Galil's approach was to prioritize the idea over the Masorah. But isn't that more of a risk to lose the idea if you don't have a Masorah? Isn't that like, wouldn't they, I feel like they would have, if we're going to say that even B'nai Yehuda has this risk, well, then it seems like all the more so B'nai Galil would have it. Because even if someone's like, oh, here's what the idea was, it's like, yeah, how do you know that that's...
So that's okay. That's what Sam was saying, is when you're giving over like a type of thinking, it's not the specific idea that even matters. It's the way to think, the way to be creative, the way to get insight. It's developing your intuition and how to see concepts.
I understand, right.
Specific idea, does it really matter so much?
Right.
That doesn't. This B'nai Galil is going to go to you, but I don't think B'nai Galil would like the B'nai Yehuda very much in a certain sense. Is that you criticize them? Is that you're so concerned about this, but you're so worried about the text and making mnemonics and you're missing the concept, right. And you have to get exactly your Rebbe said it. Well, you don't even get the, you don't fully get his idea. You have to get the idea yourself. You might understand it a little bit differently than him. You can't pretend you don't. And give it over the way you do. You might reorder the Shmuos based upon your understanding, and you can't give over somebody else's understanding. What are you trying to do? Trying to give her his understanding? You can't. So all you do is converting into words, which is not really kosher about that.
Right, but I guess...
And Yehuda, they're going to say, you're corrupting the whole Masorah. Nobody's going to know what Rabbi Akiva said, according to you. You're going to forget the Shmuel. You're going to forget the, this thousand years of Masorah built up. And you guys are losing the whole thing. But yeah, you want to get the idea. I don't want to hear your idea. I want to know Rabbi Akiva's idea. And you guys are losing it because you're being lazy. You're not being precise. You're not being careful. You're not making mnemonics. Yeah. And there is two different approaches here, and each one, in a certain sense, is critical of the other,
right?
To some degree, yeah.
But like, what I'm seeing is that, like, even though okay, fine, the methodology then, but
aspect of the Torah, but the Masorah of what the earlier Tanaim said, it came from Bnei Yehuda. That's what we have it through the Mishnayos and the Braisos, the Seftas, all those things are thanks to Bnei Yehuda.
Right, I'm saying that, but you're saying that they didn't carry over like the heart.
No, they did. Of course, they did. They had a rebbe. They had a did. But it's a sacrifice. You learn from one rebbe. You're going to have one clear nusach, one clear.
So,
text.
What did we lose in that sacrifice today?
What did they lose?
What did we lose? You're saying there's a sacrifice. That's what I'm curious about. Like,
what did we lose? Well, I don't think we lost
in receiving this Masorah, Bnei Yehuda's Masorah, since that's the Masorah.
No, we benefit Bnei Yehuda, sir. We have a perfect, beautiful text of the Mishnah. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of missile changes, but let's just pretend. And in Gemara, we have that from Bnei Yehuda. And then now you want to learn how to learn, so go to multiple Rebbeim. You can use the Bnei Galil approach.
So how did those Rebbeim, if they didn't have...
Okay, I think those...
Rebbeim learn these different methodologies, if not from Bnei Galil.
Okay, let me see if I can take... I'm going to try to answer with Ken.
Yeah.
I think you have to... As opposed to saying what did you lose or whatever it is, I think you have to think about it a little bit of a different way. Okay, so let me take up the last one. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
How do you set up the machlokas?
Let me do that. Okay, let me do that now. The third thing, and I'll try to set up the machlokas in a certain sense. And they're framing it a certain way.
The thing we said so far is it seems like what is the main emphasis? Is the main emphasis the ideas? The main emphasis of the text?
Let me just try to. I'm going to try to shift it a little bit to like... present the machlokas a little bit in a different light.
Can you? I mean, I don't know if I'm being premature because I really shouldn't what you have to say, but I'm saying theoretically, can you say that both of them held that the concepts are the main thing, but the question is was the text essential, the presentation of the text essential to retaining or having a derech for the concepts?
I think you need both. I mean, I think you need
both.
You
do need both.
You need both.
Well, then what's okay? All right.
Okay, so let's see. Okay, good. Okay. I'll try to give you my approach. Okay, I want to just say I did this with Yaakov Trachman, so I forgot to mention that, as we did recently. Okay, let's say the last one, the Gala Masechta one. Okay, so here you really see the different approaches. Is when you're the let's go. I'm gonna go with more like the second. First, we'll talk about the second approach in Rashi, but is where the Bnei Yehuda wanted to get an idea clearly. What exactly? Get the idea, formulate it, distill it. Get the idea clear in a clear, simple, straight formulation. Medakting b'taimel shadavar until they see the ideas mitsyashiv in their heart. Okay, what is the contrast with that? So I think the contrast is that. Is that leaving the idea in a more abstract, less defined notion, okay? Which makes it, in a certain sense, when you want to teach it and give it over to somebody, it's very hard to give over an abstract idea. So I remember like a lot of times with Rebbe, I think, okay, is that when we teach in the Shir, he would have a very abstract formulation. And when you try to get it, he would say it, he would say the idea, and he wouldn't break it down and spell it out for you. Okay? And you would have to basically try to get the idea, and essentially you have to work almost back into the sugya, back into the shonim, and you have Rebbe guiding you because you have this far, but ultimately you have to arrive at the idea on your own. It wasn't broken down and spelled out for you. Okay, because I really think that there's two different types of thinkers. Okay, there's an intuitive type of thinker, and then there's a sensory type of thinker. Okay, where sensory data. And I think there's like two different types of personality, okay, two types of personalities. It's a certain division between types of thinkers, types of personalities. Certain people who are very intuitive and abstract. I'm using it's a division that Carl Jung made, if you want, just a source for where it comes from. But
thinking feeling that way?
Or no, that's
intuitive opposite. Versus sensing.
Yes, exactly. Not right, not the thinking feeling one, but just intuitive versus sensing. Exactly. So there's a type of a thinker who's just like much more intuitive, dealing with the abstract ideas, And that person sometimes has difficulty in communicating the idea, teaching it, giving it over. Because the ideas exist in, again, ideas are not words. Right. And they, and it's just very hard for that person to say, communicate and teach it over. That's why I think Rashi also, B'nai Yehuda always had a focus on teaching and being able to transmit it in a clear way. But a person who's the opposite of the intuitive abstract thinker is much more wants to get the data and the senses. What are the facts? They want to see all the facts in the sugya first and have them all clear and precise and spelled out. And when that person wants to get a svara, they want it to be absolutely really clear svara, and it should be to get the idea clear in their mind and give it over exactly. And it's just two completely different types of approaches. I don't think the Gemara, when the Gemara is comparing to David and Shaul, I don't think the Gemara is saying that the intuitive thinker, the intuitive mind is bad and the sensory data thing is good. They really are just two types of people, and there's no way to say one is good or bad. But the Gemara does call Shaul like Rishos in a sense. I think that's when it comes to Hora. That's Ravina's point. Ravina is this third thing is when Ravina applies it to David and Shaul, is that in terms of Hora and Psak, the intuitive, if you just go with an intuitive Psak where you're not grounded in the facts and things aren't clear, it just lends itself to mistakes. And that's bad. That's not good. To have a Psak where you don't have clear svaras and it's based upon, you're not going to get willing to get your hands get dirty. You're not going to look at the Mar Adam and see precise. David is getting his hands dirty. He's wants to get the facts. He wants to get, he's willing to get involved in the nitty gritty of a sugya. That's the type of person who could be a posuk. And that psak is going to be accurate and it's going to be clear and people are going to be happy with that kind of a psak. The person who is the intuitive abstract thinker, he's not a posuk. It's like, I think Reb Chaim used to go to somebody else for shilas. He didn't answer his own shilas. Not that the intuitive approach can't help illuminate psak. Reb Chaim oftentimes has novel chidushim in terms of a psak that comes from a svara. But Reb Chaim, that's not the mind of a posuk. It's Reb Chaim is the intuitive, abstract, theoretical mind, which is great for svara. But when you want psak, you want somebody who's much more data, you know, data fact driven, who's able to get, you know, nitty gritty in the sugya. That's I think the Gemara's criticism. Criticism in terms of is not necessarily B'nai Galil, but is if that kind of approach is not good for psak. So Shaul, I guess it's somehow again. I don't know how the Gemara really knows the personalities of David and Shaul. It seemed to be saying David is that kind of a personality. Maybe that's the person of David who you want running a kingdom. Administrative, he knows, you know, for war and for tactics. General running a kingdom, you want somebody like David, maybe more derisive from there. Shaul is somebody who's, you know, he is riding above it. He's living in his own, in a certain sense, an abstract theoretical world, not necessarily great for administration, not for, I don't know. I don't know why Igmar necessarily knows David and Shaul's personality, but
he was head and shoulders above everyone else.
Yeah, head and shoulders. It's a metaphor, exactly. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, there are a few cases. Not waiting, killing Agag, you know, yeah, there's a lot of cases. Maybe, could very well be. It's definitely needs to be developed, but it could be that's exactly the direction to go in, for sure. Okay, let me see if I can now take a step back here. Okay, so this is what I think is happens, okay, is there are different types of people. There are different types of thinkers. The one is the intuitive type of thinker. The other is the sensory data-driven type of a thinker. Who is, and again, there's different personalities. The sensory data type of thinker is more organized, wants the structure, wants to get the facts exactly correct. And you know, that person drives them nuts. Anybody who doesn't even care about the facts will just change the language to fit into a svara, who gives a svara without seeing, you know, other people. You have to do all bakiyas. You have to see every single fact before you can give a svara. And those people drive them nuts when anybody does anything differently. And then there's the other kind of personality, the intuitive thinker, just, that while you're doing daf yomi and you're reading and you're getting all the facts to what the whole essence of Torah is, this far in the ideas, and while you're getting bogged down in the facts, it's too much cheshbon, too complicated. What are you doing? You're missing the core. And there's different types of thinkers, and Torah lends itself to both types of thinkers. There's a place for both in the Torah. But they're different. Okay. Different yeshivas are going to be characterized by the Rosh Yeshiva. If the one who starts the yeshiva in the Galil has one type of approach, okay? So, and the one in Yehuda has a different type of approach, B'nai Yehuda, so certain things are going to result from that. One is, naturally, they're going to teach in a certain kind of way. which is going to influence their talmidim. Also, somebody who's an extreme person who's, and these are certain things just you're born with, person who's a highly intuitive thinker in B'nai Yehuda, he's not going to be happy there. He's going to find out they learn a little different way than B'nai Galil, and he's going to migrate and go north and learn from somebody he's going to want to learn from. And somebody likewise, a person who's a data-driven, sensory type of thinker, who's living in the Galil, and he's going to go down to the B'nai Yehuda because that's where he feels comfortable. That's where he thinks is the right thing in the way that fits his mind. And you're going to get, over time, it's going to become more extreme. The B'nai Galil is going to become a culture of people who think more intuitively, who value that approach. And the B'nai Yehuda is going to be the exact opposite. And you're going to develop two cultures and two methods and two schools of thought, which will, on the one hand, influence anybody. A lot of people are not so extreme. They're kind of like, you know, can go either way, but you're going to be influenced by your Rebbe, influenced by your peers. If everybody's valuing one way and learning one way, that's the way you're going to start to be drawn to. And anybody who can't adapt themselves to that method is going to go to the other school, change yeshivas. And what's going to end up happening, this I think naturally happens, is you end up having different types of yeshivas, different schools of thought and types of thinking. And is it a machlokas? That's what I want to say for it. I don't think it's a machlokas as much as there are just different types of people, different ways the mind works. The world needs both types of thinkers, and the Torah needs different types of thinkers. It's important that you have a diversity of methods of thinking, styles of thinking in the Torah, because different eras lend themselves to different things. In this particular time period that Rabbi Yehuda Merav is referring to, the important one, I don't know what the B'nai Galil would say, but the Talmud Bavli is saying, the important thing was the B'nai Yehuda. That was more essential. They're the ones, the Skyma Taras and B'yadam. In that era, that's what we needed. Okay? Again, I think nowadays, I think things change. When the Girsas are all written down and the mnemonics are written in the Gemara and the Shmuas are all arranged, you could argue what you need more is the theoretical, the Rukhaim style approach, the B'nai Galil approach, where the theoretical Svaras, that's the more important one for the Masorah or you could argue they're both good and they're both fine nowadays. It doesn't even make a difference nowadays. There's just two different approaches. Each person is fine. And during the time period, what the Gemara is definitely seen very clearly saying is that in that time period, the B'nai Yehuda were superior and there was necessity in them so or for them. The Skyma Taras and B'yadam, they're the ones that the Torah was necessary for. That's the Gemara is definitely putting forth that. The other thing I would say, the conclusion of the Gemara is that in terms of Psak, the Gemara seems to always be valuing the Posek who is not the intuitive abstract thinker. That lends itself to mistakes. Maybe make bad comparisons because it's looser a little bit, or because it's potentially this is a shawl possibility. Once you're in an intuitive type of Psak, it's less rigorous. It lends itself to bias for an emotion. If you're an emotion, can get in the way, either you're unaware of an unconscious type of thing, it can lend itself to biasing the Psak in the intuitive type of thinker where the more data-driven, rigorous analysis doesn't lend itself to, it's more formal and restricted. It doesn't lend itself to being influenced by emotions as much. So it seemed in terms of Psak, the Posek always comes from the kind of the David type of a thinker. And again, Klai, so not everybody in Klai doesn't have to be a Posek. You know, the Posek can come from that. Klai always has the sense, a certain cross-section of people who are the data-driven thinkers, and that's where the Posek can come from. And the theoreticians, that's fine. That's a different place in the world of learning. But that's what I think is going on, is that just naturally in every yeshiva and every time period, you have different types of thinkers. They're going to aggregate around the Rosh Yeshiva that promote that kind of thought. Once that builds, it'll influence everybody who's in the middle. And then anybody who's too extreme is going to naturally change yeshivas. Different eras will need different types of thinking. And I think it's just important to take this Gemara, realizing that even though the Gemara seems to be saying one, that Tosfos really points out to you is that there's another Gemara which seems to advocate the exact opposite when it's dealing with Svara. You want Svara? Have multiple Rabbanim. B'nai Yehuda made a little bit of a sacrifice. Maybe that was their personality, is what they valued. But if you're going for accurate Girsa in that time period, you have to sacrifice on the Svara. So I just think it's such an interesting Gemara where you really see that Tosfos really shifts it. That was the key Tosfos for me. Is just to realize that the Gemara seems to be presenting one is better than the other, but ultimately you see from that Tosfos that's not true. It's just dealing with a specific context where one was better than the other. Yechezkel.
Talmud shouldn't be also Baal Chiddush, because then all the Chiddushim will just be totally erased. You need to maintain the next Talmud in line has to be someone who just repeats over the Chidushim. Otherwise, all the Chidushim of the Scuttle will be totally lost because his main Talmud is a Baal Chiddush himself.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. He's saying like from the Rav almost. He's saying the Rav was like this Baal Chiddush, but then he's preserving exactly what the Rav said. Is he doing himself in the Rav?
Yeah.
Or he was? Yeah. Okay. Fine.
He wasn't talking about himself. You know, he wasn't explicitly talking about himself.
That's a different.
And I think he also said that before anyone gives, it can even think about giving Pesach, they have to know all of Shas.
Yeah, Shefker is definitely that the Rav is for sure the intuitive type of thinker, no question. The Rav is actually amazing. The Rav is actually able to do both. He's unique. He really is amazing. The Rav is really incredible. But Shefker for sure is more the data driven, it would seem. From what I should say for sure, from what I've seen, it would seem Shefker is that way. But I mean, that's an interesting point you're quoting from him, is that besides like in spell, Shefker is saying in terms of generations having an alternate. There's value in the alternating generations. That's a nice approach. You don't see it from this Gemara, but I hear the idea in time, having it alternate in time.
Yeah.
For sure. Nice idea. Okay.